It's time for Twig, This Week in Google. I'm Jason Howell, filling in for Leo. I'm here with Jeff Jarvis and Stacey Higginbotham. We're going to talk about this late-breaking news that Google might have plans to censor its search product in China. Also, check in on some of the Pixel news and Pixel leaks, possibly a new Chromebook, Pixel book coming into the future. Checking in with Stacey on the things that she loved at last week's Google Cloud Next 2018. And so much more. You'll have to listen next on This Week in Google.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 467, recorded on Wednesday, August 1st, 2018. Techno Tragicomedy. This episode of This Week in Google is brought to you by LastPass. Secure every password-protected entry point to your business. Join over 33,000 businesses and start managing and securing your company's passwords today. Learn more at lastpass.com/twit. And by MasterClass, online classes taught by the world's greatest minds. For a limited time, get a free 7-day trial at masterclass.com/twig. And by Wink, the best way to discover new wines that you'll love. Go to trywink.com/twig to get $20 off your first shipment. It's time for Twig, This Week in Google. I'm Jason Howell, filling in as best as I can anyways for Leo Laporte, who is, I think, floating down the river. He's in Tahoe right now, having a whole bunch of fun. We're having a whole bunch of fun as well. We're planning to for the next little bit. Joining us, as always, Jeff Jarvis. And this is, wow, this is a lot of stuff here. I didn't put all this in, but I'm going to do my best to say it. BuzzMachine.com, the Leonard Toe Professor for Journalistic Innovation at the Craig Newmark Graduate School of Journalism at the City University of New York, and the Director of the Toe Knight Center for Entrepreneurial Journalism at the Craig Newmark Graduate School of Journalism at the City University of New York.
That's me. And this is my new Google Home device, which is talking to me, so I apologize. I'll turn off my mic.
Yeah, and I think you're going to like that device. You literally just unboxed the Lenovo smart display, so you haven't even had a chance to play around with it yet. Soon. Hey, there it is. Fancy, fancy. Also joining us, Stacey Higginbotham, creator of the IoT Podcast at IoTPodcast.com and the Internet of Things newsletter at StaceyOnIoT.com. I feel like we need to have a bunch more stuff for a really wide lower third for you to equal Jeff's.
No, I am good. I'm not dressed as well as Jeff. I don't want to equal him in title length. I'm good.
Well, it's good to see you guys. It's been a little while, and I always enjoy getting the chance to do this show with you. So thank you.
I vote for Goddess of the Internet of Things as the lower third.
That works.
That is my title, actually. Were you not aware of that?
Straight to the point and true.
You pray to me when things break, and I do nothing.
Right, because it's the Internet of Things. There's only so much that we can even do, yes. Really. Let's be honest.
I just tell you to reboot.
Well, why don't we start with the Internet of Things? Because that device, Jeff, that you just unboxed and you started setting up, that's running on Android things. Did you know that?
I do. But I have to explain what that means to me, because I just...
Well, it's like a stripped-down, more specialized version of Android, specifically made for IoT implementations. Device. But what you'll notice when you're playing around with the UI on that is that it's very much in line with kind of Google's new direction of user experience and UI. It doesn't look like Android necessarily. It kind of has its own thing going, but along their kind of style guidelines, it's really nice.
Yeah.
And nice. It comes with additional support. And so... It's not still crazy long support, but you'll have it for a little bit longer. And that's good because these devices shouldn't die. You know, some of them won't die after 3 years, for example.
Let's hope not.
Oh. So what all can I do with this wonderful little thing? Can I watch CNN?
You can. MSNBC? So Kevin bought one and we talked about it on our show earlier today. So I can tell you, if you would like to know, all the things that Kevin has done in with his 36 hours of the device.
But Kevin is a show off, but that's okay.
He is the most delightful show off. So he connected it to his YouTube TV account, So he watched CNN. He said he could voice control it. So he would say, turn to channel 10 on CNN, or turn to channel 10 on YouTube TV, and it would work. Netflix is built in. So you can say, hey, watch, you know, Nailed It on Netflix, and that'll happen. YouTube works. It's also a Chromecast. And here's my favorite thing. You can set it up to Chromecast your Google Photos. Sorry, not Chromecast. You can set it up to show your Google Photos when it's like in neutral mode, so off, but not really off. So those are all really cool things. And then it ties into your, if you have a Nest doorbell or a Nest camera, it's going to tie into those. So you can say, hey, show me the front door, and it will. But there's like a 6 to 7 second delay.
Yeah, but it does if this is in your kitchen or whatever, which I think is kind of the default, like, what do I do with this? It seems like a great kitchen device, right? If you're in the kitchen, you're cooking, maybe you want to watch something, or maybe you want a recipe is always another big use case for something like this. Looks really nice.
Okay, what's the news?
Here's the latest news.
Prepare yourself.
NPR.
Prepare yourself for the latest news. Take a deep breath, Jeff.
I don't want that. No, stop. I don't want that now. Stop me.
And you'll, as you play around with it, you'll get kind of more used to, it took me a little getting used to last night on All About Android, the kind of swipe actions from the side to get to the different pieces of information that it can surface and all that kind of stuff. But
now it's like in the back. How do I, it's in the background playing me this. I don't want it.
Tell it to stop. Hey, stop.
Oh, that's right. Hey, stop. I feel so powerful.
You did that, Jeff. Congratulations.
Good job, Jeff.
Only because Stacy told me.
I'm going to do the dad. I'm calling these dad hands or Jeff hands from now on, because that's the exact same thing I do when something. I'm like, God, don't do it.
What do I do? Oh.
No, my favorite thing you do, Stacy, is when you get excited, when you do the ooh, ooh.
Yeah. That's right.
I'm going to get excited about stuff later today, because I was at Google's cloud conference last week.
That's right.
And those, where there was edge processors. Announced. Yeah, it's exciting. Okay. Someone in the chat room asked if it works with Ring. It doesn't work with Ring yet.
Yeah,
so
that's a bummer.
It is a bummer.
Ring, of course, sponsor on the Twit Network. But that would be.
I can find Calm.
What I would want to use it for in the kitchen.
That's especially. One of the things I can do. I can find Calm. I lost it about 40 years ago.
You can find Calm?
I don't think Google's going to help you with that, Jeff.
I can play.
What does it do when you find Calm?
Noises.
Or like white noise and stuff?
That's incredibly irritating and will not make me calm.
Jeff. I think something might be wrong with your Lenovo smart display.
Stop that.
Don't ever do that again, Jeff.
Can it go portrait to landscape, or is it one way?
Supposed to, yeah, but I didn't.
Oh, it's supposed to when we do video call. Let me see if I can. Here, I'll show it once the call is made, because it shows information on the screen. You know, I don't want to show your number or all the people in my contacts list. Let's see here. So I'll put in Jeff.
Well, I get a spam calls anyway.
So, it says I have to invite you. Okay.
You called me a minute ago.
Well, no, I went into Duo, and it's in order to call Jeff, it said I had to invite you. That's because I'm trying to call you from.
Add me on
here.
Duo. Okay. Add me on Duo.
Here,
use
I'll just
this
call
link.
Your number. I did it through the contacts this time, and for whatever reason, it. That. Okay. So give me a second here.
Verify your number. No.
Yeah. It just takes me to Hangouts now. That's weird. It worked before.
Phone number verified. Okay.
This is the story of the internet right here.
See, it just works every time. Oh, hey, now it's working.
Now it's coming into my phone, but it's not coming into the Duo, into the thing.
It's not?
Oh, what? Oh, you probably haven't hooked your phone up to the Duo, so it knows your number. Does the Duo, did you, when you signed up on the Duo?
I think I did, but I did it off the home, the home app.
Okay. Then,
we'll have Jeff call you.
Yeah, so I just put my number into the doc chat.
Okay, hold on.
We'll take that
and
do that. We'll see if that works.
See. Explore more things you can do. Where's make a call? Oh, I see. I just tell it, right?
Yes. Hey, G, call Jason Howell.
I wonder if that'll work.
Okay. Oh, hey. call, make a call.
I don't know how to call, make a call.
Okay, make a call.
Who do you want to call?
So now I...
Say Jason.
Pick another Did it ask contact.
Who? I might not be saved in
You're not in my contact. I can't just put a number in?
You should be able to. So I can dial from Google Home. I can say, okay, call... Blah, blah, 512-555-6682.
Okay, hold on.
But if you do that, yeah, mute.
I'm turning my mic off.
Probably a good idea. And we can we could just wait for it to happen. See, these on-show demonstrations always work right
now. Well, this is how people can see the learning curve. They're like, oh, Google actually dialed that for me.
Oh.
Like someone's talking to me.
Thankfully, it was just a 555 like fake number.
Yes.
At least you didn't say 911. That would have been awkward.
It's giving me a few notes first, telling me emergency numbers aren't available.
Okay, good. All right, so I'm waiting. Once I start to see something here, I'll let you. I'm getting a notice on my Pixel Book. I'm not getting. I'm getting a private call number or private. Incoming call. That's not Duo. No, that took me to phone.
That's you.
Hi.
But it's only audio. There's no video. Oh, it's a call.
How's it going? Yes, this is the...
I'm very confused. I need to find some calm.
I think we all need to find some calm. I'm going to hang up on you now.
Oh
my gosh, you guys.
So it wasn't video.
It just works. Huh, I really want this to work. I want to see the video. I don't know how I can force it from my end. Like there must be some sort of like account set up on your side to allow incoming calls to it.
I can call Kevin Toefel
on his
Duo on his screen. If he'll answer on the screen if he's there.
Hmm.
But
I'm going to try one more time, Jeff. See if the call comes through on your
No, it came through on my phone.
Oh, okay. Well, at least we saw a call complete. At least we have this. Yes, it just works the way it was never intended.
And it's vertical, so I can't fit in dad hands.
Well, you should flip your thing to the side. Is your thing landscape or portrait?
No, this is on the phone. This is not on the...
Phone is not as great of a... No. So... If you go to Kevin's Twitter account, you can see he and I using Duo. If you want to, when you put it in landscape mode, you look a little wider than you are.
Oh no, I don't need that now.
But that's on the bigger one. I don't know if the other one does it. You get a finer resolution on that one.
So obviously, if you're getting one of these for yourself and you plan on making video calls, you're probably not going to jump right on a podcast 2 seconds after you unbox it. So you're probably going to have better luck than we had just then. I'm guessing. There must have been some sort of setup process that we missed. I just kind of assumed if you logged in with your account and Duo is tied to your account that it would work. But then at the same time, your Lenovo smart display is not tied to your phone number. And if I remember correctly, when Duo launched, that was its big thing, was it's secure because it's tied to your, like, you don't use your Google account. You use your phone number. Did that get changed at some point? It must have in order to enable this, talking through like a smart display.
No, because you actually give it your phone number. Like, so my Google Assistant.
Oh, hold on.
Has my phone number in the app.
Allow free calls. Okay, so let me try it again.
Allow free calls. Oh, okay.
Yeah, because if you don't want this, because people can video call you, you get the chance to not accept it, but.
Okay, so allow free calls is now activated. Is that right? So I'm wondering if. Once it is. Just let me know when I should try again, and I will, Jeff.
I just called you. I'm dialing you now.
Oh. No, again, I'm getting it from a phone, incoming Wi-Fi call.
Is there a video?
Hello.
Hello.
Thank you for calling This Week in Google. This is Jason.
So do you have the Duo app on your phone?
Wait, Jason, weren't you on the... end this. Okay. Weren't you on the show? Weren't you hosting the time we called customer support at Google?
Yes. Yes. Yes.
That was one of our greatest moments ever.
That was fantastic.
If we do say so ourselves.
Let me try calling you then, because for whatever reason, that's not working. But now that you've set that up, maybe my incoming call will appear on here.
It's coming on the phone.
Oh, God. All right. I don't know. I think we have to abort. I don't know if it's going to work, which is weird.
Google!
Why?
Watch. It doesn't work because it's my apps account.
No.
It shouldn't have any impact. That was a joke.
I wouldn't be surprised, though. Seriously, history seems to make that a possibility. All right. Apparently, that's not going to happen.
I would like everyone to know that within a few moments of unboxing his, Kevin and I did complete a perfectly acceptable duo call.
Apps account on either side?
I have
an apps account, but it's based on phone numbers. And rang me on my Duo. Like, it pops up. It's like, will you accept a Duo call from Kevin?
All right, Let me try this.
No.
We'll see.
Well, now we've got, okay, now I'm doing it. Hold on. One more time. I'm going to say make a video call.
Oh, yes, please.
Yeah.
That would be the way to go. Crossing fingers.
Especially since you're dressed so well.
All right. So, yes. We'll see how this goes. He's firing off the command to the Lenovo smart display. I'm still looking at myself in my Google.
Sorry, something went wrong. Try again in a few seconds.
Don't you love that?
I think I want everyone to know, if you're listening to this later, that we did actually sort of try this before we started the show.
I think we thought we were better set up than we actually were. I mean, you know, it should work. I would imagine if you log into your account and you then fire up the video call, you know, software that's on the device, you'd think it would work. Apparently, it doesn't.
I feel like it might work. I almost want to buy one just to take it back on the plane with me, just to see if I can make it work. Because I feel pretty confident that there's some user error happening here.
So it's interesting. The UI. Yeah, oh, hey, Stacy.
I'm sorry. Do-do-do. I feel like there's a lot of variables here, and maybe something.
One variable named Jeff. Yeah, I know.
Nah, let's just blame Google for everything. Google's used to taking
the heat. Yeah, we can blame Google.
Yeah.
I mean, it should be easy for everyone, even Jeff.
Well, it's interesting. Stacy. The UI is interesting because you click on the explore more things you can do, right? And you click on any of those things, and all it does is give you a sample thing to say.
Right, right.
There's nothing else to click on, to touch. Yep.
But if you fire off commands like to control your lights or something like that, or you know turn up the heat on the connected thermostat or whatever, it'll give you an on-screen kind of interactive control that you can interact with. Then it's like your voice starts the process. But there's no way to go to the screen and just fire it off, just like that, huh? I
live TV, and all it does is give me six commands. Play Sports Center on YouTube TV.
In order to do that, say this. Yeah.
Okay. Play MSNBC News.
Sorry, I can't help with that yet.
Oh.
Does NBC?
Play CNN.
Here's the latest news.
That's not going to. Yeah, here's the latest news. It's not going to give me the live feed.
Do you have a YouTube TV subscription, podcast. Jeff?
I have YouTube Premium Red thing.
Premium Red is just for YouTube. So actually do this. Say, show me Corgi
Google,
videos
stop.
On YouTube.
What, pardon me? What?
Because you're asking it to play TV, but you don't have the TV subscription. So say you have a Netflix. Have it play Corgi videos on YouTube, and then you should see it play something for you.
Okay. Play Corgi videos on YouTube.
Here's what I found on YouTube.
Here's pictures.
And then you should be able to press a video and start it, yeah?
YouTube Premium. Is that what that says, Premium?
Oh, there it is.
Funny Corgi Compilation 2017. Best Funny Corgi videos ever.
2018 is already out. This is so old.
This is dated. These corgis look so 80s.
I mean, come on.
They're pegging their pants. My God. They're popping their collars.
Are you getting a corgi when you get home?
What
you do? Am I going to get one? No. I have a dog. Okay, so you can see that. And if you had a YouTube TV subscription or if you tie it to your Netflix account, then you can say, watch, you know,
whatever, right?
Mastermind on Netflix. Or
yeah, it's nice. Perk. That's nice.
Yeah, I tried to start setting up. The problem is like it wants me to do HBO Go. I don't have HBO Go. I have HBO, which I can use on my phone and my laptop, but it's not HBO Go.
You have HBO Now.
Now, I mean.
Now, yeah.
Whatever. Well, there's that Fakakta CBS thing, which I don't want.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know how far, like Netflix I know is built in. And if you get YouTube TV, then all you say is play MSNBC on YouTube TV, and it will.
Aha. Uh-huh. So how much does YouTube TV cost?
What is it, like $40 a month or something, I think?
Yeah, no way. No way, because I have...
It replaces cable.
Yeah.
It's $40. Yeah, no, I got cable. So
it's your
I have Fios.
It's a cord cutting app, basically.
All right.
I drop into YouTube TV if something's happening, like the Olympics that I want to watch, then I'll buy it for a month and then I'll be done.
You know, I'm afraid this could be like, got the right thing here. What was it? The Zumbi? Remember that?
The Chumbi? The Chumbi? No. Okay, no, this is way more functional than the Chumbi.
Okay, that's good.
Jeff, just give it a few minutes and set it up properly. Yeah. Not on the show. I feel like we're going to come back to you.
When we do things on the show, things happen. Like you lock yourself out of your account or you can't do video calls. So we keep learning this lesson time and time again. It's a bad idea. That's why it makes great TV.
Pick news sources, customize.
I think you'll like it. It's a nice device. I like that they add the hardware toggle for the camera. I'm afraid to use the word switch because Karsten was giving me static on that prior to the show. But it actually has a physical slider so that you can put a cover over the camera if you don't want the camera to be...
Oh, that paranoid thing, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, better than putting a piece of tape on the camera if that's what you want to do is cover the camera. So... and I think devices like this, that's just going to set some consumers' minds at ease to have something like that baked in. So why not? All right. Well, we started with the Lenovo Smart Display. My initial thought was that we were going to start with Google's big news that from this morning from The Intercept.
I'm worried about this.
We went in a different direction, but let's talk about this after... We thank the sponsor because we've got a few ads today. So I want to first take some time real quick here and thank the first sponsor of this episode, and that is LastPass. And then we will talk all about Google's China situation. This episode of This Week in Google is brought to you by LastPass. I'm a huge fan of LastPass, been using them for years now. According to one survey, 32% of employees share passwords with others. What is your company doing to protect itself, to ensure that those passwords are being shared appropriately? LastPass Enterprise makes password sharing convenient for employees while keeping access to corporate data secure. It even allows for full customization of access, including the ability to set master password requirements, enable password resets, configure over 100 policies, access security reports, create shared folders. It's so many features. Organized database logins, SSH keys, software licenses, and other important business information so you can protect that information securely. And then LastPass makes it easy to restrict access when it's needed, when employees, say, leave the company or no longer need access to that particular account to get their work done. You can further protect your business with multi-factor authentication. There's LastPass Authenticator, which is an app. It's a verification button inside the app that pops up on an employee's phone to guarantee that they are the only ones with access to their accounts. And even if credentials happen to be compromised through something like a phishing attack or malware, the app then makes sure that outsiders won't have access. LastPass password generator makes it super easy to come up with unique random passwords that your employees don't have to remember or write down. They don't have to come up with one on their own. It randomizes the whole process, inserts the right kinds of characters in there to make it really easy to generate strong passwords. And now employees can log in to LastPass with their Microsoft Active Directory credentials. So they truly only have one password to remember, and that would be their AD password. And data is encrypted and decrypted at the device level. Data stored in the vault is kept secret, even from LastPass. So even LastPass doesn't know. From easy onboarding to password autofill, I love password autofill. Makes my life so much easier on Android. LastPass makes it easy for businesses to take control of passwords and reduce the threat of breach. LastPass also offers LastPass Premium. That's more for personal use. LastPass Families for your entire family, and LastPass Teams for teams of 50 or fewer. Like I said, love LastPass, been using it for years, got my wife on board, and we rely on LastPass. We've come to rely on it over the years. It's because it just works. It takes the kind of second guessing and poor security practices out of your life and puts it into a secure package. LastPass also, by the way, celebrated its 10th anniversary this July. So happy anniversary. Happy birthday. More than 13 million people trust LastPass, the number one most preferred password manager. Learn more at LastPass.com/twit today. That's LastPass.com/twit. And you can see which product is right for you. And we thank LastPass for their support of This Week in Google. All right. So this is giving you...
Our dear friend Ant Pruitt just tweeted that he thinks what we did just now was funny. No, Ant. No, it was sad. It was touching.
I thought it was funny.
He enjoys watching the world crumble around us.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, Ant.
Ant is definitely a good friend of the network. And
he is indeed.
Show. Yeah. So thank you for tweeting that out, Ant. I agree. It was kind of funny. But I also agree it was kind of sad. We should have been able to get there. I'm not sure why.
Tragic. Our techno tragic comedy.
We'll figure it out the second we stop recording this show. We'll be like, oh, that's what we
should have done.
So, Jeff, tell me why this gives you pause that Google might be censoring its service for China.
I was very proud of Google as an outsider. I mean, like I'm their parent, but I was proud of them for taking a principled stand and not doing this before and leaving China. And it was whereas Facebook's been trying desperately to get into China, Google was there, but when forced to censor on their own, Google said no, and they fundamentally left. And I thought that was a principled stand. And right now we're expecting the platforms to make principled stands. We're pushing YouTube and Facebook to get rid of InfoWars, we being lots of people. And so I think it's more important than ever for the platforms to act on principle. Now, I well understand the fiduciary view that China is a gigantic market and Google's dying to get in there. Facebook is dying to get in there, but they've got to know their line. They've got to know what line they won't cross. And I think censoring search has to be Google's line.
Well, and Google had already kind of gone through this to a certain degree, right?
Yeah.
They did this back in, I think, 2010, pulled out of China because for a few years prior to that, they were doing similar things, kind of a stripped down, censored version of their service operating in China. And they got an intense amount of scrutiny. Why is it different now? Why would they get less scrutiny now?
I don't know. Yeah, go ahead, Stacey.
Well, so far they haven't done it. So right, they may right. still no, get point. This scrutiny coming. But I mean, I imagine it's the economic, I mean, they can't not be in China. They've watched Tencent and Weibo
yeah.
Eat their lunch. And how do you say no to being in a country with, you know, a billion people?
Yeah, I know.
I mean, yeah, like you said, Jeff, from a fiduciary standpoint, yes, that makes
it's
sense.
It's fairly clear.
Sundar Pichai, CEO, has been very dedicated to the next billion users, and this is an obvious way to do that, is to crack the Chinese market. But it seems to strengthen those that pointed to Google removing the "Don't be evil" tagline from their company nomenclature, to kind of be like, okay, well, now, like, when you're stripping away features that enable, you know, an entire country to be misinformed and not, you know, not allowed to understand or know that certain things exist for reasons that the government, you know, stands to gain from because of the communist regime or whatever the case may be, are you then enabling that? And does that set a precedent for other countries to say, well, now Google's willing to do this, so we'll do that too. Yeah. We'll have them do that too for us.
I would be interested to see if the employees freak out, much like they did with the Pentagon contract for machine learning. So it's possible.
I remember the arguments we had on this, the discussions we had on the show back then. You know, the belief by some that a hampered Google is better than no Google in China. Right. You know, that's a decision Google made was no. And I agreed with their decision at the time. One could argue that.
I mean, I guess I understand, and I do think it's a terrible line to cross, but I am also kind of like, they've been acting a lot more public, more like a public company, paying more attention to their shareholders lately. So it kind of doesn't surprise me.
So Stacey, here's another way to look at it. Because what's the line? So Facebook right now is under a lot more pressure than Google is, which is why this is a convenient time for, I think, Google to make a decision like this is, hey, squirrel, look over there, Facebook, look what they did now, right? So, but what would the line be for Facebook? Right? Because we're asking Facebook, we society, media, government, are asking Facebook to set a better line
Those lines are culturally determined. And so another
culturally
argument,
and authoritarianly are different things.
Right.
They are. Now, I would say that in China, there are some cultural norms that Facebook could respect that we would find kind of abhorrent in, like, I mean, so I don't love authoritarianism and censorship, but a lot of people in China are very adept. They work to get around censorship.
But
I don't think it's ideal, but maybe Google's kind of like, and maybe they're like, screw it. The world is burning anyway. Let's get our money while we still can.
What I want to like them better than that, Stacey.
Yeah.
I want to be proud of them.
Oh,
I don't know why I'm sounding like such a dork.
I'm like, that's so cute, Jeff.
You know, because
put your faith in Mozilla or something.
It's really hard these days. I mean, I'm constantly in the position of defending Silicon Valley, defending the tech companies, and it gets harder. I'm tired.
They're not behaving as well, Jeff. I mean, I defend technology, but even I look at this and I'm like, dang, you can call it techno panic, but we're building a lot of tools without thinking about the ramifications. And when we are thinking of the ramifications, we're saying, shrug. Someone else will worry about that.
Well, watch out.
Or the damage is already done.
I've been reading Gutenberg books like crazy, man. So watch out. I'm going to do Gutenberg stuff. Right. So the press is invented and there's peasant wars and there's huge disruption and one can't control the future. You know, you can try to do things right or wrong. I agree with that. But I think there's a limit to your ability and authority to determine the use of these tools. Now, I don't think Facebook's gone far enough. To say that, I think that InfoWars if InfoWars doesn't fail the test is wrong at Facebook. So I think they should be doing more. I think that Mark Zuckerberg thinks that he has the role of free speech in society, as I said last week, and he doesn't. So he needs to set standards for what's acceptable on Facebook, and he has more authority there than he wishes to acknowledge so far. Right. Having said that, I think that it's a bit hubristic to think that we can know what all the impact is and determine it and fix it all now.
I don't think we can, but last week I was in, it was a community summit analysts or some people who influenced. I think it was an influencer thing, y'all. I was really appalled to find myself.
Because of course you're an influencer.
I was like, no, I am not an influencer, but I was there. and one of the people there who did, we had a discussion about AI, and a person who was with Accenture's Ethics and AI group started really pressing them on what does it mean to develop these tools and how do you view, like, yes, it's a tool. How do you view, like, rules and how should we start thinking about this and what is the role of companies like Google? And the Google guys, he gave the very standard technology is like a rock. It could be used for good or evil. And I would argue that it's not actually because AI is invisible and rocks are pretty obvious. When you commit crimes with rocks, you're left with like a dead body or a broken window. When you commit ethical violations with AI, they aren't noticed necessarily. So that's just me. But he kept talking about that. And he kept saying it's the role of the government. And the person kept pressing them on, well, don't you think you as a company have a job to think about those ramifications?
Right, right.
Yes, it's a tool. And they were like, nope. That was not a thing that they wanted to bring up. And I know that Google's gone very far and has their AI standards, but they still aren't thinking about the future ramifications.
I agree, Stacey. No, I agree. I just think that, you know me, I get allergic to thinking that we can regulate this future. But should the companies come to their own standards of deciding what appropriate behavior is? Yes. And as you said, one of you did, the employees may well do that as they did with the drones. Though I just saw a Wall Street Journal headline today in which the Wall Street Journal is saying more people will die because the employees did that with drones and Google.
That's the Wall Street Journal.
Yes, it is.
Like, it's hard to count that. But I do think it is your job if you're going to invent a technology or a platform to think hard about the worst ways it could be used and to reach out to people and say, hey, what do you think could happen if we do this and listen to that feedback?
Well,
I
interviewed Jonathan Zunger, who's a brilliant engineer who was at Google, is now doing a startup. And so I talked to him about this, about where's the line and how do you set it. And his analogy I liked was to civil engineers in the early days, right?
Ah,
if you built
yes.
a bridge and it fell apart, you didn't do your job right. So your job was to figure out how to build a bridge that doesn't fall apart. Now, that was okay because it was the bridge. And you can look at the bridge and say, it's up, it's down. It's a different matter when you get into human behavior, and impact on human behavior is very hard to predict and hard to measure and hard to control. And maybe in some cases we shouldn't control it, because in lots of cases we shouldn't, because people can discover new freedoms. I was at an event. Sorry, go ahead, Stacey.
What about an analogy like drug trials? Because that's something where you have subtle long-term effects. So maybe mechanisms like that to be put in place for something like algorithmic bias or whatnot. I don't know.
I think that they have a responsibility to measure their own impact. And what they do with that and how transparent they are with that and how much you can rely on that, different questions. But to not try to measure your impact, I think, would be irresponsible. Yes.
And I don't think they are measuring.
Well,
I think you're right.
I have to imagine to a certain degree they are, though. This is Google. And yeah, I mean, with the amount of people that are working on this sort of thing behind the scenes, although The Intercept said it's a very small amount of people, probably like 200 people, according to the person who leaked the information about this kind of China plan. But I mean, even Sundar Pichai, I guess we don't really know Sundar Pichai on a personal level, but I've always kind of thought of him as a very thoughtful individual. I imagine in thinking about this, I'd be really surprised that they don't weigh those consequences. It just seems that right now, according to this leak, they've decided that, we've weighed the consequences and we stand to gain a lot, so why not try? And
that's a fair assessment for a business to make.
Sure.
I mean, it's not a great assessment.
Is it? Is that an assessment that we're used to hearing a company like of Google making specifically? Or
well, I was going to say, you know, companies make these assessments all the time. You look at someone like, Exxon, who says, "Hey, you know what? Climate change is a real thing," all the way back in the 70s, and said, "You know what? This isn't good for our business. Let's fight this for a while.
Let's do this anyways."
I mean, there's a look at DuPont. I mean, we can find many examples, and now the tech companies are going to become part of this wave of companies making decisions that benefit them and not society as a whole. And that should not surprise any of us. Because that's what companies do.
And especially these companies are making ridiculous amounts of money by doing so, you know?
And that's what government's for. I mean, that's historically why we have it, is because as individuals, we can't assess this stuff. We can't enforce policies. And I mean, you see it with tobacco companies. We see it with, I mean, just, this is what they do. We're just in a new venue.
For government to figure out. Right. Government can't figure it out, Stacey. That's what I mean. So in every case, they're basically abrogating to the company, look like the right to be forgotten. Google, you figure it out, right?
The hard thing here is because it's the internet is a worldwide phenomenon. And yes, smoking is a worldwide phenomenon, but you could sort of police it at the borders with taxation, for example. With the internet, we don't have a way to police these things and the mores and values of one country versus another. You know, it doesn't matter. I don't know.
Yeah.
And now that everyone's sad and depressed, I mean, GDPR is a wonderful effort to try to make this like Europeans' privacy thing. And it'll matter for Europeans, but I'm not sure if it'll matter everywhere else.
And it has unintended consequences like bifurcating the web for news consumers in Europe.
Right. And that's because, again, the internet knows no borders. And that's a benefit and a challenge.
Yeah. I mean, this goes back to this is why I'm going Gutenberg crazy again, the notion of the nation changed after the book. The notion of a culture changed after the book and after language was standardized. Things can change again. The nation may not be forever. Don't know.
Yeah, in a long term view, things probably will change. Nothing lasts forever. And who knows at what point in that inflection we are right now.
Except podcasting. Podcasting will be forever.
Yeah. Never going away. Just staying the same. You'll always get your podcast through the same podcatcher and the same. You'll always download it, subscribe to an RSS feed.
That's it.
Good point. Let's see here. All right. Well, you know, we were kind of touching on Facebook, and Jeff, you are dressed to the nines. I would say maybe the eights. I don't know.
I don't mean you to show the video. I just put it in there to explain why I am dressed this way.
Yeah. So you were on MSNBC earlier today talking about this kind of Facebook, this recent Facebook news about a coordinated political influence campaign.
Sorry. Yes. And I think that there's a growing one-day consensus that Facebook is perhaps getting its act together. That Facebook this time did right. It announced, uh-oh, we found bad stuff. We found efforts to have an impact on the political. They did not say what country it came from because I don't think they felt that they had enough evidence. But to everybody outside, it looks an awful lot like the IRS stuff from Russia.
Yeah, everybody's assuming it's Russia.
People are assuming, but I don't know that's necessarily a good assumption, because what happens, what Data and Society, the think tank Joe Donovan's from, finds often is that there's a copycat structure here where you see very similar techniques happening among Russians and then trolls. I would bet on Russia too, but who knows? They also did not release the entirety of the material they found, because some of it, I guess, is just so horrendously offensive. They didn't want to be associated with that. And I think I'm okay with that. I think about it. But the point is, they did something. And so what I said on MSNBC this morning was that what we've got to change, now that they're getting their act together, we've got to change our attitude here. Facebook is the ally of democracy. And Facebook properly done is our best hope, because our government, Kristen Nielsen did finally change her tone today, but her tone has been, there's no Russian stuff going on, whistling past the Kremlin. And so who is going to protect us from the Russians? Donald Trump? Apparently not. Facebook is our best defense, and that's a weak defense, they would be the first to say. But they're our ally in this, and they're also a victim of this manipulation. And so I think we have to, once they get their act together and get going, I think we have to change our mindset of, oh my God, Facebook's ruined the democracy. No, Facebook is trying to save it now. Oh, you cynics.
Well done. Nicely timed there. I don't know. I'm going to have to internalize that a little bit. I don't know how I feel about that. That's a hard turn for me to take.
My gut response is, God, if that's that's what we've got. We're in deep.
That's where. Deep well, doo-doo. We are in deep doo doo. We are in deep doo doo.
I don't use Facebook all that often. So I look at this and I'm like, yeah, I guess I'm still in love with newspapers and conversation and civic outreach. And that is not happening on Facebook. And I don't even know if young people are there anymore. So I'm like, I'm confused as to who is influenced by Facebook. And I'm not saying that that's not happening because I see that it must be. So I just don't know.
That's really important, Stacey, because what you're also going to there, which is what one of the other things I contend is, we can't take all of these actions and make all these presumptions without data. Now, part of it is because, you know, we can't get all the data we want from Facebook, but this presumption that all of civic discourse is ruined, you know, you've heard me say it on the show before, show me the Nazis in your Facebook feed. You know, they're not there. When I was on MSNBC this morning, Stephanie Ruhle, who I think is great, said, well, this is like Bear. And if there's 5 contaminated bottles on the shelves, then Bear took them all off the shelf. Shouldn't Facebook do that? I said, really? Take off all the conversation? And she said, should they? I said, no. And Bob Torricelli, former senator from New Jersey, was on the panel as well. And he made an eloquent defense of free speech and worried eloquently about the slippery slope and the risk to free speech. Not that Facebook is an agent of censorship, that's government, but that depends on what we expect of them to take down. Where does freedom go? These are hard.
And people are always going to believe stupid things. I mean, good Lord.
Always have.
So I know this makes it easier to spread, but I don't know. This is not a problem I'm equipped to solve. It's not even one I'm equipped to talk about, really, because I am not a deep ponderer on this type of stuff. Let's talk about chips.
Talk about chips?
Yeah.
Okay. What kind? Lay's? Cheetos?
Are Cheetos really chips?
I don't know. Actually, as I said that, I was like, oh, well, does that qualify?
Like, I don't know.
Stacey, if you're in Britain, of course, you call French fries chips, which is my segue here to ask whether you've had Taco Bell's spicy fries and queso.
I have not, Jeff. I'm so sorry.
I'd like your critical opinion, Stacey.
Of the fries and queso? I don't like French fries. I think it's important to know that.
And I think it's very odd to put them in queso, but I still want your critical opinion, Stacey.
Oh, no, cheese fries can be good. I mean, suddenly I'm like, oh, no, no, that's a great food.
Okay, all right.
Cheese makes everything better.
Does cheese make
the chips you meant?
Does cheese make, what is it, edge tensor processing units delicious?
There we go.
I believe it makes them highly effective.
Okay, what can you tell us about this? Google basically has a new TPUs for IoT devices. What are these going to be used for?
IoT devices was right there. No. Okay.
Oh, she's feisty today.
I know.
Feisty.
It's earlier in the day for me, so I'm not, you know, hungry and tired. Okay. So I'm just going to run down the biggest thing, and this is part of it, is the biggest thing from Google's cloud stuff last week was actually that it got with the edge. It met Microsoft, it met Amazon's cloud services when it comes to edge computing. And this is a big deal because we're in the middle of kind of the pendulum swinging back from, yeah, put everything in the cloud, to people realizing, oh, if we're going to actually connect all this stuff in our factories and all these other places, we're totally going to need some local computing for security reasons. You know, you don't want your secret data going to the cloud. Latency reasons, if you have an autonomous car or a giant slicing blade in a factory, you don't want data saying this is about to fail to go up to the cloud. You want it processed right there really fast. Bandwidth costs, power costs. So all of these things mean the edge is really important to companies. What Google did with the TensorFlow things is say, hey, we can bring machine learning to the edge. Machine learning takes place in two ways. One way happens in the cloud. That's when you train a model to like recognize this is a person, this is a cat, this is a dog. All of that happens in the cloud that you show it lots of pictures of these things and it figures it out. And then there's the inference or execution that happens where you take that model, you put it on a computer, like your phone, you put it on an edge device, and it says, when the dog walks by, it says, it uses that model and says, dog.
So let me understand that, Stacey. Can I interrupt for a second?
Please.
Because when I saw this story, I thought, well, what's AI without a heck of a lot of data? So that's not what it's doing. That's happening somewhere else, but it's taking the lesson and the framework and says, this is how you recognize a dog, stupid. And stupid little local chip says, okay, thanks, and sees a dog.
Right. So what this is doing is it's – so in that framework and everything is called a model. So you send your model to the edge.
You send your model, yes.
And the model runs and you're like – and so – but it's still got to be a pretty decent chip. So that's why it's cool that they did a TensorFlow for it, because there's still some interesting requirements for, you know, it sees a bunch of stuff and it's got to look at all those things to say, dog, not dog. Right?
Hot dog. Not hot dog.
Hot dog. Exactly. So
corgi, not corgi.
and yes, you can do that. Now, depending on your edge processor, this is kind of a little wacky, but you can train it to do, like, the fatter your processor, the more models and the more sophisticated the model can be. So you could have, like, right now in your iPhone, you have a vision, you have a computer chip that's running computer vision that's just like, human face, and then it wakes up an even smarter processor to do the face recognition for Face ID, right? So all this is this tiny, very low power processor that's like, human face, wake up the big guy. And the big guy wakes up and is like, that is Jeff Jarvis. So what Google's doing here is the same thing that Microsoft's doing. At Microsoft Build, they talked about something called Brainwave, and that was a chip that is also trying to do inference at the edge. Intel bought a company called Movidius a while back, exactly for computer vision at the edge. So what you're seeing is Google answer to all of the competitive, like, demands for needing this technology. And this is really important technology that we're going to need, because you can't have everything with vision that needs computer vision to be talking to the cloud all the time. And you can't have things like a stoplight that's like trying to direct traffic in real time having to talk to the cloud all the time. Does that make sense?
Yep.
That makes a lot of sense. But this is different from, so obviously TensorFlow in the cloud would be, you know, learning the model essentially. But TensorFlow Lite, how is this different from TensorFlow Lite to Edge TPU? Just that Edge TPU is more specific, narrowly defined versus TensorFlow Lite being like, still doing some of the functions of the cloud version on a mobile device?
TensorFlow Lite is a language and the TPU is a chip.
Okay, got it. All right. All right. I'm not going to, I mean.
Got it.
No, I mean, that's.
But that enables a smartphone to replicate what's happening in the cloud.
Okay. I don't think TensorFlow Lite does the actual training that's happening in the cloud.
Okay.
But you can also do inference in the cloud too.
Okay.
So the running of the model, basically, that can also happen in the cloud if you wanted to. It doesn't have to happen at the edge.
Interesting.
So, Stacey, to jump to where Europeans and some weeks you will go to the techno panic scenario for this AI being small and local and on my phone or my watch or my glasses. What bad could happen?
Well, it's actually, I look at it as actually being pretty good, because there's privacy components. You can actually do a lot of the image recognition at the edge, and you don't actually have to send it to the cloud, which means you could use it and dump it. I don't think that's actually what Google's going to do, but, you know, one could do it. So you could have in your home, for example, a video camera that says, you know, these are the five faces that I recognize. And once I recognize those, when I see them, I take note of them, I use them locally, and then I dump them. So there's no actual record of who came in. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So,
but I'm sure in the recognition process, if a stranger comes in and you want to know who that stranger is, then it has to go back up to the cloud and say, here's who I see. Who is it? Because all the data is not going to be there to recognize that stranger.
Jason's there suddenly. But what most people don't care who the stranger is. Like, I get notifications on my phone from my doorbell right now from Google, and it's like, hey, I saw a strange person at your door. And I'm like, oh, yeah, check it. It's the UPS man. Or, oh, that is a strange person. You know, and sometimes I look at it and I'm like, oh, no, that's my husband wearing sunglasses. So, and I'm sure there, I mean, there are all sorts of evil things when I'm not a really evil villain. I don't have that mindset. So, yeah, I don't know. But, you know, some interesting, like, scary things would be, like, you could interfere with someone's model, and then you could, like, screw up their manufacturing process or something. If you're running, like, yield, using it to analyze yields, you could, anytime anything's at the edge, that means it's accessible physically. So you have to start thinking about that, and depending on how much faith you want to put in that stuff. But that's kind of out there. I don't know.
Were there any other things, you know, in your time at Google Cloud Next that, because I know last week on the show, a bunch of the topics and a bunch of the announcements were mentioned, but aside from these chips, was there anything else that really stood out?
105 announcements. Jeez.
Yeah, I mean, the list is huge, but
it's ridiculous. I didn't see all of the announcements. Yeah. I thought it was interesting that Target's now working with Google Cloud. Makes sense. And, you know, because the retailers don't want to be on AWS. I think the Kubernetes on-premise is a big deal because that, you know, that expands the orchestration environment for containers, which is like the hot thing in the cloud, to people's on-premise database. Overall, it feels like Google is finally maturing its cloud offering in a way that listens to customers and what they want, in a way I associate more with Microsoft as opposed to Amazon, because Amazon's like, we built it, you can use it, here's how. Microsoft's always been like, we listen to our customers, we try to build what enterprises want. And Google's always been like, we invented this crazy, wacky, cool technology. It's so awesome. And you'll like using it, but they never show you how, they never help you get there. And it feels like they're actually taking all the cool technology they've developed and trying to help people get there and use it, which is a big step for Google. Mm-hmm. So that's the broad kind of, I don't know, thing to think about. And from a news bits, I'm thinking, yeah, I don't know.
Awesome.
That was last week.
Yeah, I know. So that was ancient history.
Oh, I lied to you. Machine learning. Oh. Good Lord. Oh, they are doing some crazy stuff with machine learning with their customers, especially with things like map and location data. Man, they are applying that to just crazy stuff. Everything from like parking to like, I don't know, florist delivery to like disease epidemics. I mean, it was pretty cool, some of the stuff they were showing off there. So
speaking of the cloud, Carsten, I just sent you a photo of something I came across in New York yesterday. Did you get it? Email?
Yeah, he is checking right now. I can hear his eyes looking at a browser.
You can hear his eyes. Yes. Yeah. So what, AWS Loft? Did you know about this?
Oh, they did one in San Francisco for a while. This is where like you could just go and work there for a while.
So this is if you're an AWS customer?
I think it's if you can, it's like for startups or anyone to come in, and it's kind of, it used to be a co-working space in San Francisco. It's like a pop-up store they create.
Oh, interesting.
Wow.
A pop-up co-working space.
I don't know if it was 100% co-working or if you just go in to find out, you know, it's been so long since they've done it. So I'm like, I don't remember what it was exactly. Here, let me look it up so I can tell you accurately.
I guess I could have done that. Oh.
Boot camps for AWS stuff. So they're pop-up lofts. They have them in New York and San Francisco and London. They have pitch events. Ta-da!
What's hot at the loft?
Container day, you guys! Serverless days! Oh my gosh.
You get a container! You get a container!
Yeah.
Cool.
All right,
you didn't go in, Jeff?
I didn't go in because I didn't feel worthy.
And plop down. And
oh, man, you could have learned all about serverless and been very excited.
I thought I'd be sure. Quizzed at the door.
Why are you here?
No.
Are you looking for MSNBC? It's around the corner.
Man, in tie? You're not allowed in here with a tie. What do you think you're doing?
That is true.
Sir, we have a dress code. You can't wear that tie in here.
Hoodie or go.
Let's take a break.
I could take the tie off now, couldn't I?
Yeah. Go casual.
Relax.
The first half of the episode, Jeff was all business. Now Jeff is all party.
The other thing is, I don't know if you can see in the background, there's a white shirt hanging on that doorknob.
Yeah.
That's my twig shirt. So I finally figured out the reason I get pink all the time is because if I wear all black and everything's black, it doesn't know what to do with my face and hair, the camera.
So when I wear all white shirt,
look at this. I'm kind of like normal.
Yeah.
You look human.
Yeah, which is rare.
I mean, your shirt is blinding, but
yes. But that's better the shirt than me.
Right. That's true. Fair enough.
It was just doing white balance on my face.
Right. Yeah, it does look pretty good.
Yeah.
You're doing good. We got a lot more to talk about, but before we do, we got to thank a sponsor. And this is actually a brand new sponsor on the network. This week's episode of This Week in Google is brought to you by Masterclass. And I got to tell you, just from a personal perspective, I started to notice, I watch a lot of, you know, in music production realm side of things, watch a lot of tutorials and stuff like that. And I started seeing ads for Masterclass, and so I'm so thrilled that they're on the network because it's given me the opportunity to take a look at their content and really kind of dive in, because it's awesome. Imagine, if you will, learning the things that you are interested in from probably the people in the world that are most notably doing those things. For example, imagine learning new recipes from Gordon Ramsay or photography tips from Annie Leibovitz. Now you can. And obviously, that's with Masterclass. Masterclass offers online classes taught by the best in the world. Malcolm Gladwell teaches writing. Chris Hadfield, that's probably a really great one, teaches space exploration. Best in the world, people. And I'm not sure how Masterclass did it, but they were able to get some really amazing people to come in and just teach their craft, teach what it is they are known for. Ron Howard teaching directing. Each class is shot with cinematic production quality and offers on-demand lessons loaded with exclusive content that you're only going to find this at Masterclass. So you go on there. It's almost like, I almost compare it to like the Criterion Collection. If you ever watched a Criterion Collection movie, and you turned on kind of the director's commentary and you got this really inside detailed background scoop or idea of what it was like to create the movie. It's that. But that mixed with like a documentary, because they film these interviews and these courses. They're full-on courses, step-by-step courses, and they're just shot so well. They're beautiful. They sound great. And it's almost like you're there with that person as they're teaching you what they are so known for. Just really great stuff. I'm actually just getting started with the two that I heard about months before that I was really interested in getting into, musician, who you probably haven't heard of, but Deadmau5. He's an electronic musician. Also another, DJ musician, Armin van Buuren. And so far, like, there's just,
these are great. It's Bob amazing. Woodward teaches journalism. Steve Martin teaches comedy. Like,
yeah.
Bob Woodward. That's the one I would do.
Yeah, I know.
I've known about this for some time. Serena Williams teaches tennis, for God's sakes. But they really have gotten a phenomenal constellation
of
the best in their fields, and they shoot it really well. And yeah, as an educator, we've taken notice of this at our school.
Yeah,
that they're really quite something. We want to do things like this too.
I mean, I imagine, like, you know, acting is just one example. There's a number of different ways from the director's perspective to acting to script writing, screenwriting, all that kind of stuff. Like, you could base curriculums around the concepts that they're teaching here and have this, you know, really be the kind of supportive background behind it. They're adding new classes all the time. So they've got a whole roster of new classes that they plan on adding in the future. And, you know, this isn't just for someone who's looking for skills. Like, for me, music production, I'm going to find actual usable skills from the Deadmau5 and the Armin van Buuren walkthroughs that I can use on my own productions. But maybe you just enjoy watching professionals in their scenario, in their perfect situation.
Their milieu.
Or working with people. How do they work with people? It's all from that perspective, it's almost like a documentary, an educational documentary, split into course, you know, topics. It's really fantastic stuff. Masterclass has been featured by the New York Times, Vanity Fair, ESPN, And, you know, this is going to help you if you have a passion or if you want to develop your career, or if you're just interested in watching Steve Martin be hilarious as he teaches you about comedy. You're going to find a masterclass for you. So for a limited time, our listeners get a free 7-day trial.
Whoa.
Free 7-day trial. So that's 7 days that you can go in there. You can take a look and check out the content here and really dive deep and see what you think. You're going to love it. Masterclass.com/twig, T-W-I-G. And yeah, 7-day free trial. Learn from the best in the world at masterclass.com/twig. You'll be impressed by the amount of these that there are. And each one is significant, hours long, many, many hours in each course. So masterclass.com/twig. Check it out for yourself and let us know what you think. I think you're going to love it. Masterclass.com/twig.
I'll look for Karsten Teaches Podcast Editing.
Yes. Oh, there needs to be a podcast one, obviously. That's that's got to be next.
Kim Kardashian
step
teaches contouring. I would sign up for that.
All right. So, what do you guys think? I mean, we've got so much in here, and we've hardly scratched the surface. Do we want to talk about pixel rumors? Or have we already done that? Okay,
well, we did a little bit. I think that tweet made me potentially happy.
Okay, potentially happy.
You want to tell about it?
Hiroshi Lockheimer on Twitter. He said this was a couple of days ago. I was away on a business trip for a few days. Came back to a desk with a stack of new devices to test out. Sorry, I didn't take any pics. And don't AMA. Don't ask me anything. A little humble brag there, I think.
So I went in and left a reply saying, I hope that one of those is a Pixelbook. And then today I went back in and said, now that I'm thinking about it, I hope you find time to just smash a little Phi sim into that Pixelbook.
That would be nice. That is that would definitely be a nice addition. Hey,
that would
you're
make
not
me happy.
You're not far off. EvLeaks a week ago said, and noted leaker on Twitter or leak source, Evan Blass on Twitter said, add to this fall hardware lineup a second generation Pixelbook with smaller bezels scheduled to ship before the end of the year. Let's just hope that they have that that LTE baked in there for you.
That'd be lovely for me. I would like that a lot.
Yeah. I love my Pixelbook. I love this
device.
I do
too. So you Elgin and I got into a macho off. It's the exact opposite of macho as to who loves Chromebooks more. I didn't do this. I didn't send it to him, but somebody emailed me afterwards, sent me things that Mike had said snotty about and dismissive about Chromebooks.
Oh, in
years
past?
Ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, but I mean, for what he's doing, the digital nomad stuff, like the Pixelbook is like the perfect device.
I just insisted that I love them more and sooner.
All right. That's I was there before you.
He was the hipster, the original hipster Chromebook lover right there, or Pixelbook lover. Right.
Yeah. The thing is, now I see all these stories about, oh, wow, you could just use a Chromebook. Isn't that wonderful? And I've been there for 3 years, Debbie.
Yeah.
I've been there. And the price, by the way, on, even though obviously this means they're going to replace it, but the price on the current Pixelbook now on Amazon is down at a record low.
Yeah. It dropped. I know I put that in here. I'm not seeing it.
It put it here.
It's all the way up there. So yeah, so $750 for the i5 8 gig 128 gig storage model. I actually think that's what I have. I got the lowest entry.
I did too. Which is huge.
Totally. It's fine. I have no problems at that level. But yeah, $750. Which I feel like for the build quality and all that, that's a great price. I don't think it's ever been that low. And then, oh, by the way, related to the Pixelbook, I just reviewed last weekend on the new screensavers, the Acer Chromebook Tab 10, which is the first Chrome notebook form factor. So no keyboard whatsoever. And that's 330. So that's a different type of device entirely. It's really geared for the education market. In fact, initially it wasn't even for sale. You can only get it K-12 with schools that were supporting Chrome and that sort of stuff. Now they've opened it up, so you can buy it for $330. I mean, it's a tablet running Chrome OS. Obviously, it runs Android.
Or Amazon stuff doesn't run, but it has problems.
What's
anything involving CRM as an Amazon app does not run well. Netflix does not run well.
DRM.
Oh, DRM.
Right? Oh, DRM.
Thank you.
Okay.
I'm like, what? Salesforce?
We're all doing that.
My alphabet. Jason, have you tried the HP one, the separable?
The HP.
So one. HP has one now out, which is the screen is separable, thus becomes a tablet.
Oh, becomes a tablet. Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's interesting. It's in the stores. Oh, poor Stacy. She's yawning at the topic of Chromebooks.
Sorry. No. I every time you guys talk about Chromebooks, I'm like, man, a lot of people like these things. So then I feel bad that I'm not Kevin. Because Kevin could be just like diving right in here and telling Kevin, you Kevin everything.
We should do a duo call with Kevin on these things.
Yeah. If only we could connect. if only we could connect a single duo call. I have not played around with that one yet. I will say that in my experience with this one, Chrome OS on a tablet with no connected keyboard was for me kind of a nightmare. Anytime you want to type anything on the screen, the full screen keyboard takes up 2/3 of the screen, leaving you with this little sliver of anything to work inside. And just when you're talking productivity, it just, man, talk about slowing you down way slower than anything else. So,
and I think the LA Public Schools made a big mistake, to my mind, when they went with Apple tablets versus Chromebooks. So they went with no keyboard in the schools. It was a disaster. And I think you get from the earliest age, kids need keyboards as an entry.
Yeah.
And it's what they're going to be using. So keyboards
they're for content creation as opposed to content consumption.
Right.
And kids, you really want them creating some content.
Yep. Yeah. Well, I couldn't imagine like typing out a thesis, you know, on a touch screen. I mean, obviously, you're probably not going to do that. But when you introduce that as the form factor, as the baseline minimum, it just sets you up for failure, I think, in the worst possible way, personally. But we don't have to talk about Chromebooks. I know, Stacey, you're probably bored. Are you more excited about the Pixel 3 XL and the fact that it might have wireless charging?
I am. I would love anything that involves wireless charging.
Yeah.
Because I'm out of outlets. I'm out of USB slots. I have connected jewelry, people. I mean, I've got just connected everything. Everything's plugged in. I just need wireless power like yesterday. Yeah.
Save me from having to actually connect a wire into my devices, and I'll be happy. At someday in the future, your home will be lined with power walls that just project power into
you. And our internal organs will cook.
It'll be great. Battery. You're going to love it.
It'll be fun.
Yeah, apparently the latest Google app alludes to something called Pixel Stand, which might actually be some sort of a wireless charging Pixel Stand for like your night table or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, because if I could just stick, I mean, my goal in people who are like, wireless charging isn't really wireless charging. You still have to plug something in. I just want to have a dedicated spot in my home where I could just stick my phone and my earbuds and my Ring and my Fitbit and my whatever
Stacey,
else.
The issue is this. So when we built this, when we renovated this house many years ago, we were very proud. We have mud room off the garage, and we put in a closet there, and we had a shelf with nothing but like electric plugs behind.
Oh.
And every night, that's where we'd put our phones. Why don't we use that anymore? Because our phones are next to our bed. Yeah. So having a place where you charge all your stuff, I might get your jewelry on it, but a lot of this stuff you want with you.
Well, you could put that charging tray on your night table. It doesn't have to be far away. It could be on your nightstand.
Yes.
The idea is that you just have, instead of having to like plug things in, you could just set it on something.
Right.
Or you could buy an IKEA table that's all charging, right? Isn't it?
Yes. Well, the top
is. How big a space?
The top is. That whole top.
That's what I'm saying.
Like,
top.
Like if you lean it up against a leg, maybe not.
Enough of it is, though. That would be incredibly convenient.
Stacey's pro tip for better sleep. I actually plug my device in. I have a little area in the bathroom with a dresser. I plug it in there instead of by my bedside table. And I'm a more relaxed and happier individual because of it.
Heck yeah. You aren't tempted to like wake up in the morning and be like, ugh.
I never want to be that person.
Start swiping the first thing you do before your feet even touch the carpet.
I used to do it when I was at GigaOM, and it was terrible because you just you wake up to crap, you go to bed to crap, and you know, it's no bueno.
Yeah.
So I wake up this morning. I was going to work at home today. I thought, okay, you know, I'm waiting for my wife to get out of the shower. I pick up the phone, you know, look a little Twitter, and I see the email saying, is it 7:08? Can you be on MSNBC at 9? And I live more than an hour and a half away.
Oh, no.
I'm okay with life passing me by like that. That happens to me sometime, and I'm just like, yeah, that's
FOMO.
Cool.
FOMO.
I have no FOMO.
And I'll see some
dork worst.
On the show instead of me. No.
You did great. You obviously had some coffee before your appearance.
I arrived with 4 minutes to spare.
Oh my goodness.
Sweaty. So the nice
good
makeup
thing
lady.
You're a pro, man.
Yeah, no kidding.
The nice makeup lady gave me this so I could daub my own forehead. On the show.
Blotting papers.
Meanwhile, 20 minutes leading up to you arriving, they're like, is he even going to make it? He said he was going to be here in time.
The
is
guy,
he?
So I'm sending updates. You know, Waze says 8:33 at the Port Authority. And the producer, they're used to this. There's, yeah, okay, we'll have somebody downstairs, get you upstairs. It's okay. So,
oh, okay. Hey, it all worked out.
So I'm glad I had my phone there.
Yeah. Well, that's true. Yeah.
Otherwise, I would have missed out.
Oh, man, I've enjoyed just waking up and not checking any notifications, nothing for like the first 2 hours that I'm awake. But I'm waking up at 5 o'clock now. So
why?
Yeah, if I check email or anything before I work out, I don't work out.
Yeah.
So
it just gets you distracted, right. Sends you down that path.
Yeah. Probably. So I'm just like, in that way, you know, yes, I might miss on being on an MSNBC, but dang it. I'm going to get my workout in for the day.
Yes. Fair enough.
You're good.
Fair enough.
When do you go back to Tejas?
August 15th. And then I leave again to go to Banff. And then.
Oh, my.
I know. I do anything I can to avoid Texas. Banff is a 40th birthday present to myself, my best friend, and
Eric. Oh, that's nice.
Sounds fun.
It will be.
Yes. And almost happy birthday.
Oh, yeah. No. My birthday was months ago.
Oh, happy birthday then.
Yes.
Months
happy
ago.
Happy 41st then.
Hey, we're not there yet, Jeff. Come on, man.
Happy Wednesday. How about
you
that?
You don't know old.
Happy Wednesday.
Hey, how do you guys feel about notches? I think I know how Google feels about notches.
How mind my notches? You just kind of go blind to them. But three notches, where are they putting all these notches? That was my question.
I'm not sure that we'll see a three notch. Well, we definitely won't on Android because apparently only two notches are allowed in Android P. They've mandated a requirement of only two notches, only the bottom and top, and only one per side. So in other words, you couldn't have your two notches both on top. Not sure why you would want to do that, but Google has gone to the lengths to make sure that you don't. Because who knows?
Like, you know, someone might design a phone. It's all notches.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking. Like almost like a border. A border
of
notches.
Yeah, like a scrapbook border. Like yes. A cute little, like.
Why? Because we can. This is for the notch possible. Lover.
Oh, you know, did you guys read? It was in Logic Magazine. I thought this was really fascinating.
Where is my copy of Logic Magazine? Yeah.
Do you actually have that?
No, I've never heard of it.
I was like, do you realize? I had never heard of it. So I was like, wow, Jeff. It was on Shenzhen and this whole creation of how Chinese manufacturing is like changing, basically how Chinese manufacturing has grown to this like wild and crazy world where people just build on top of builds. And they were talking about like people designing phones that have a compass that points to Mecca and it's popular in the Islamic world. It was just like, it felt like science fiction, the world that they were describing. And it was such a fascinating article. And so now I'm sad that I cannot find it. But it was Logic Magazine, Letter from Shenzhen, I think. And I highly recommend everyone check this out because it was just a glimpse into this culture that, wow, you know, that's...
What's the company that makes all the phones...
Foxconn?
Foxconn. Oh. A friend of mine went there for meetings with high executives, and just the story of going into the belly of the beast in Foxconn is amazing.
Yeah. So this is logicmag.io and this is called Letter from Shenzhen.
I put the link at the bottom of the doc.
It's called Shanzai, which is like knockoffs, but now they're calling it the new Shanzai. And it's like this concept of basically kind of like open source hardware where people just build on top of other stuff, like the long tail, Chris Anderson's long tail in physical goods and technology. So super crazy, super fun. I want to live it. I kind of made me want to live there just to see all the crazy stuff. But I don't really want to live in China because, you know, I'm a journalist and I like saying things.
You like your uncensored Google.
I do. I like Google. But the parallels they were making is like, we think like in urban areas, we might be used to all this. But even in super rural areas, these guys are can do all this crazy stuff with their just their mobile phones. And I don't know. Go read it and be like, dang it. No wonder China's going to kick our butts.
That'll be included in the show
notes. True that.
That'll be included in the show notes as well. Let me think here.
What else do we got?
We're probably also going to see, not that it really matters to very many people anymore, a updated Daydream viewer at the event, I'm guessing, because apparently the headset is now $70 off. That began today. So they're blowing out the Daydream view. It's $30 now at Verizon. The description lists the item as EOL SKU, so end of life. So I can only imagine that a new Daydream viewer is around the corner.
Using a phone, though, as opposed to...
I'm guessing. I mean, they have the standalone one by, is it Lenovo, I believe?
And then, of course, it's Oculus that's standalone.
Yeah, the Oculus Go.
So, Dr. Android, what are you thinking of this Pixel Watch?
Dr. Android, I like that. I mean, I'm having a hard time getting excited about Watch anymore. I suppose that the Wear OS thing kind of passed me by at this point. But I'm really surprised that up until now, Google hasn't done their own Pixel Watch of sorts, and we've been hearing about rumors that it might happen for quite a while. A few months back, Ev Leakes again tweeted that there would be an unveiling at this event. Also updated Pixel 2 Buds or Pixel Buds Generation 2. But now we're hearing that there's going to be possibly three different versions of the watch, the Pixel Watch. Some of those versions with heart rate sensor, all using a new version of the Snapdragon Wear 3100 system on a chip. And this has kind of been in the works for a while by Qualcomm. And then, of course, always on assistant.
Do you think the watch needs its own SIM card, its own phone?
I do.
You do?
You do? I could never figure out if I really needed it or not, because I always have my phone on me anyways. But why do you need one?
So I would need it because I don't carry my phone all the time. So I like to go running or walking and doing things without my phone.
How do you do that? How do you?
I know, Jeff. Wow. I again, this FOMO thing. I'm like, eh? So, but I like to have my music, for example, and I like to, you know, this way I don't actually have to worry about missing out or I need directions. So those kind of things being in my phone are actually really useful. Kevin has called me from his Apple Watch, which I don't really recommend, but, you know, it sounds fine. And I don't know. I think for, depending on the price, obviously, but if it's a reasonable price, I love having data in my watch.
Well, I mean, no matter what, it's a monthly data fee that you have to kind of factor in. So I guess you just have to ask yourself, like, does this thing, this piece of technology that I wear on my wrist, is it worth a monthly fee? I don't know if it is.
If you can get Fi at $10 a month, is Fi data only? Fi data only is, you're not paying the $30 a month for that, are you?
I don't think so. And
is that on cellular?
Yeah, you get a Fi data only SIM.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, so something like that for $10 a month. I don't know, is it $10 a month worthwhile? Probably.
Is it?
I mean, I spend hours without my phone. Plus, I wander around my house without my phone.
Stacey.
Well, I don't have pockets. Women's clothing doesn't have pockets. And phones are freaking huge. Yep, so even when I do have pockets, then I have this heavy, big, old, ucky phone.
When I see somebody now, I used to do this in the Trio days. Used to have the old belt clip. I see that now and I think, how dorky can you get?
But like, if you have it in your jacket pocket, I hate this. My husband, it drives me nuts. It ruins the line of his suits. And he's just like, I don't care. But I'm just like, and if you're wearing jeans and you shove it in your back pocket, that is prime spot for your phone to go into the toilet when you pull down your pants.
It's happened to me.
It's happened to everyone. I mean, come on.
That's why you need a waterproof phone.
Even then.
Yeah, I'm like, and Lysol wipes? I don't know.
No, just waterproof. That's all you need. No. I just looked up the, what is it, data only on Project Fi. I guess I didn't realize that's no additional monthly cost. You just get the SIM and it ties into your normal.
It ties in for the same data?
That's what I'm seeing here. Cost. No monthly cost. Just pay for the data.
I want this in my devices.
Oh, yes. This high-tech HDMI connection we have here. No monthly cost. Just pay for the data you use at the usual 10 gigabyte rate.
Well, but is that a separate $10 a month or is it included in your own?
Pay for the data you use at the usual 10 gig rate.
So if you have two devices, are you paying $10 a month?
Oh,
$10 a gig, or does it combine the same gigs?
It's a good question.
All the gigs are different, Jeff. All the gigs are different.
I would think so. I love my Nexus 7 dearly. I miss that, which also fit in my back pocket, by the way. But I knew it was there before I started sitting down. And it had a SIM in it. It was a beautiful thing. I loved it.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd pay extra for a SIM in my watch, but hey, if I was on, well, I am on Project Fi, and if I had a watch and I could just do a data-only SIM and it would tie into my normal data usage, sure.
Yeah, hell, I'd do that. Add me up.
Why not? No extra fee, but I'll pay for the data that it uses. Why not? I'll be curious to see on that regard. What else are we missing here? I know that there's a bunch of other stuff in here. Is there anything you guys are... Google cleaning up the Play Store? That's happening?
I saw that. I was not like that. Apple did that a while ago.
Yeah.
It didn't seem... It seemed really reasonable.
Yeah,
nothing,
absolutely.
Nothing jumped out at me like, oh my God.
What are they doing? Well, actually, they're doing a number of things too. Like the cryptocurrency ban, the cryptocurrency mining apps from the Play Store are now banned. That seemed to get the majority of the news, which is what Apple did very recently. They also kind of blocked this. And Google's done this in a number of different ways with Chrome extensions and its web store and all that kind of stuff. So they're basically saying if you're managing with an app cryptocurrency mining in the cloud, that's okay. But on device, it's not okay. But they also are prohibiting a bunch of other app behaviors, let's say, in this post. Repetitive apps, so apps that have a very similar user experience or highly similar content to other apps. So if there are multiples that offer that are basically the same, those are no longer allowed. Apps based on templates, apps where the singular purpose is serving ads. And I don't know if you've ever seen an app where it's like an ad appears after every single flipping thing you do inside of it. that app is probably not, you know, not for anything other than generating revenue for, you know, based on the ads that are being served to you. Apps that appeal to children but contain adult themes, apps that facilitate the sales of firearms and explosives or instruct on the creation of them. And then finally, apps that intentionally mislead users, which, wait a minute, that wasn't a rule before, but okay. Good that it is now, I suppose. So cleaning things up in the Play Store. I mean, at this point, the Play Store is just so filled. You got to clean it up a little bit.
I can't believe we've gone through so much stuff.
Here's the story to talk about.
What's that?
New York City kicking Spectrum, formerly known as Time Warner Cable, out. I think it's a big deal.
That is a big deal. And what I think is super ironic, because way back in the day when the cable... Okay, so they're going to do... Because my question was, well, holy cow, how are they going to do that? And they want to revoke its franchise agreement. And the irony here is when the cable guys wanted to launch... broadband and voice services, they appealed. They used to have to get their franchise agreements at each municipality. And they were like, God, that's such a pain for these new services we want to launch. So instead, so we can compete better with the telcos, let's just get it statewide. And so they managed to push that through in a lot of different locations, including New York and Texas. And now New York has this massive stick they can just pummel them with and be like, you did not meet your standards. You did not treat rural people correctly. You did not deploy what you said you were going to deploy. So no more franchise for you. I have to assume that they're going to fight this.
They are. Mm-hmm. But let's say they did get forced out. Do they sell the infrastructure to another comer? Is there a price? How does that work? Do you have any idea?
Well, they said that they had 60 days to find another comer to come in, because the other thing is, and they would have to, they did say that they would have to sell some of their infrastructure. Now, this is where the lawsuits get really crazy, because I mean, can you really force a cable company to sell off their infrastructure? Because I mean, and on one hand, you're like, New York has said it's illegal for you to sell services here. So it's the opposite of eminent domain, I guess. I don't really know.
Yeah.
This is kind of unprecedented.
Yeah.
But
I was amazed. Good for them,
because the telcos and the cable companies have promised this stuff for years. They've done this for decades, and no one, they may get a fine or two, but for the most part, we just let it lie. We're like, oh yeah, screw those rural people. They didn't get what they wanted. That's why they have such crappy broadband. So yay for New York for doing this. Especially
since it holds a cudgel over the other companies. I got to say this. I have had huge problems on the show over the years with Verizon Mobile. My Verizon Fios is, God bless, amazing. We had an outage recently for a few hours. First time I can remember. It's great service. Fiber.
But not everyone can get Fios. And Verizon said, you know what?
I know.
We're going to stop deploying this.
I know. It's tragic because it's a very good service.
Yeah, well, apparently not good enough. Anyway.
I always dread that they're going to sell it to somebody like Charter, you know?
I mean, in some ways, broadband has become basic infrastructure like electricity and water. And there are arguments that, you know, maybe more of it should be municipally owned. I don't know if that's where we should go with that. But we should have, I don't know, that we never mind. I'm not going to get into this.
Too late.
Stacy gets sad thinking about our lack of competitive broadband. I am a communist. I mean, I'm not, but.
You want to talk about facial recognition and how the ACLU used Amazon's recognition with a K. And, you know, we're trying to kind of make a point, I imagine, by running a number of, you know, the members of Congress, I think all the members of Congress, through the system to see if it matched up, if it paired up through
really
the facial recognition algorithm with people who, you know, may have been arrested for a crime at some point. It erroneously identified 28 members of Congress through the system at an 80% match rate, if I remember correctly. So there you have that. The software was set at 80% confidence setting. Apparently that's the default. And Amazon said after the fact, well, we recommend 95% because at 80% more matches happen than should. But they don't necessarily, like, the default setting is 80%. And
the reason it's 80% though is because you have the same people. If you're dealing with like security photos, for example, you're going to have crappier photography. You're not going to have a straight on image of someone. So that's the reason they suggest it. So it's a chance to get more images of the same person. Like if you're trying to match somebody in a crappy photo, I'm not saying that this is, but there's, you can play it both ways.
Yeah, for sure. No, that's a really interesting perspective on that. I hadn't heard or read about that, so that's a good point. However, you know, but at the same time, 28 matchups to those with mugshots proves at least a certain point, right?
Yeah, it does. I mean, and they talk about how cheap it is, which I think we should have, less than the mugshots. The fact that you can take 25,000 mugshots, train something, run it through, and then run the database of Congress, whatever, and it only costs you $12.33.
Wow.
That, to me, is like, holy cow.
Yeah.
So imagine taking all the images. Like, imagine you're a stalker or something creepy. Those are the kind of things that I worry about. Less, I mean, yes, I do worry about racial bias. That's not true. I do worry about that. But this makes this technology super accessible in ways that I don't think we're quite aware. I mean, you could build an app that scans public parks for your employees who say they're out sick if you wanted to, if you were that kind of employer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I don't know.
Interesting. To say the least. All right. I think unless there is something that
You've
I am
done
missing.
It, boss. Good job.
I mean, the only thing that we didn't talk about was free guacamole fail at Chipotle, because I know you guys like to talk about Chipotle.
What was the free guacamole fail?
You could get free guacamole if you ordered online, I think it was, and then of course it crashed.
Oh, that's like the Amazon free Echo Spot that was not. Chipotle just made a bunch of people sick in Ohio.
Really?
Sad.
Why does this keep happening to Chipotle?
Because they like those fresh ingredients. And let me tell you, when you have fresh ingredients, you got to clean them real well.
Yeah, no kidding.
Oh, parasites.
I like me some Chipotle. I don't like me some parasites.
And they make you stronger. What doesn't kill you makes you stronger.
That's true. This episode of This Week in Google is brought to you by our sponsor, Wink, spelled W-I-N-C. If I ask you to pick out a wine that you'll love but you haven't had before, are you even going to know where to start? Where would you start? Wink makes it easy to discover great wine. Isn't this awesome? I love that we can have everything delivered to our door these days and, you know, discover new things through these services. Well, now it's wine. If you like wine and you want to be a little surprised about what you receive, I mean, this is the perfect way to do it. Wink's wine experts select wines that are matched to your taste, personalized for you, and shipped right to your door. It starts at just $13 a bottle. And I mean, you know, you think that you like coming home and finding mail in the mailbox, or maybe, you know, somebody shipped a present to you or whatever. There's nothing quite like coming home to a box of delicious Wink wine that's selected just for you. You're going to want to drink it that night, of course. It's the best day of the month, and you're going to look forward to it. Just fill out Wink's palate profile quiz. Simple questions that, you know, your average store clerk wouldn't ask or be able to translate into a recommendation. Questions like, how do you take your coffee? How do you feel about blueberries? That sort of stuff. Then Wink sends wines curated to your taste. And the more wines that you rate, the more personalized your monthly selections. And Wink is not just a wine club. It's a wine company. Wink works directly with top winemakers and growers from around the world to make all of their own wine. So each month, there are new delicious wines. I'm just pulling them out of this huge box here. Outer Sounds 2017 Sauvignon Blanc. There we go. What else do we have in here? We have the Diviner Santa Ynez Valley, Santa Barbara County Cabernet Sauvignon. 2016 bottle right here. So there's four bottles in the box. And this will keep you busy for a little while, until the next shipment anyways. All sorts of other wines that they send. They also partner with local artists to develop wine labels. So these wine labels that you see, unique works of art on the bottles. No membership fees. You can skip any month. Maybe you're traveling this month and so you want to suspend it. You can do that. You can cancel anytime. Shipping is covered. And if you don't like a bottle that they send you, guess what? They'll replace it with a bottle that you're going to love. No questions asked. That's pretty awesome. So sit back and relax or celebrate with Wink. You don't have to settle for the same bottle of wine that you always get. Discover great wine today and kind of change it up for yourself. Go to trywink.com/twig. You're going to get $20 off your first shipment. That's trywink, TRYWINC.com/twig. For $20 off, and That's trywink.com/twig. And we thank Wink for their support of This Week in Google and for filling our glasses with a nice glass of wine. All right. So, Jeff, what might I ask is your number this week?
Just a simple one. 9 to 5 Google is happy because this is the 5-year anniversary of what they call Google's first hardware win, the Chromecast.
First hardware win? I guess so.
I was thinking about that. I thought we'd discuss that.
When did the Nexus come out? Is that not a win?
That's the question. Was that a win?
And was that Google specifically? You know, Chromecast was Google created hardware. Nexus was always.
That's true.
Yeah, it was always some different company.
It Chromecast did it first.
A real elegance from the beginning. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't a wait for the version 3. They figured this out. It was simple. Useful and fun from the very beginning.
Yep.
So congratulations, Mazel Tov, to Chromecast. That was it.
And it's evolved over the years. You know, now you can do 4K HDR with the latest one. They initially it was like a stick, and then they went with the kind of floppy kind of hang behind the TV.
It could fit in odd places.
Yeah, so it could fit wherever you wanted it to go. Now it's baked into Android TV that no one has. And, and also by the way, one of my favorite things was Chromecast audio, which now I don't need because that's basically what one of the many things that we use our Google Homes for kind of simultaneously playing music in different rooms. Before Google Home, you would do that with Chromecast audio and have that hooked up to your stereo system. So, yeah. Good lineup of hardware. I think that really has worked with Google over the years. And it passed the parent test. When I went home to see my parents a couple of years ago, I brought a Chromecast that I had, and I connected to their TV, and I showed my mom on her iPad. I'm like, when you want to watch Netflix, which I also signed her up for at that same trip, I said, you push this button on the tablet, and it sends it. Just make sure you're on the right input on your TV. And, you know, 2 days later, I called to check in. I'm like, how's that working? She's like, it works great. So I was
that
easy.
Would never happen with mine.
That was simple.
Oh, no, I'd get the call. What did you do to ruin the TV? I can't watch Fox News. Oh, no.
I expected
that's
that.
Why I did it.
I expected it to not be easy, and it worked. Although I like your subtle direction there. figure a way around it. Cool. Happy birthday, Chromecast. Stacey, what do you got?
Okay. Because I am traveling, I do not have a fun gadget to show you, but I did promise you guys a review of a gadget that I showed a couple weeks ago, which was the Osram Lightify outdoor RGBs lights. And they're relevant because Philips Hue is actually implementing or offering some new outdoor lights. So these were $60 and I think they extended about 10 feet. And they produce a lot of light, you guys. They don't do a true white because it's just RGB. But the colors they do produce are beautiful. And they go, it's two stories at that part of my house. So a two-story house. And you can see it all the way up the side of the house. And it lights the bushes up really well there. So the one sad thing that I didn't like about these lights was that... What was it? Oh, you can't individually change the color on each light. So there are 9 lights, and if they're going to be blue, they're all 9 going to be blue. So, but if you're in the market for outdoor lights, these are quite nice.
Nice. Nice thing.
Yeah.
And then I've complained about this recently on Twitter because I feel like robocalls and spam calls to my cell phone have like gotten out of hand. Like it's crazy. I get multiples in a single day. I wasn't sure if it happened when I switched over to Project Fi, if it was a symptom of that, but I'm pretty sure it's just everybody's getting these right now.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, there's a number of things that you can do. Actually, this weekend on the new screensavers, I cover a bunch of different things that you can try to do to help. But one thing I wanted to point out, because I feel like somewhere in the news cycle, this really went under the radar. I didn't find out about it until a few weeks later. But if you go into the Google phone app, just the standard Google phone app, and you go into your settings, there's an area in the settings that's caller ID and spam. You may remember a year ago, they added functionality that would pop up like a big red banner when a spam call comes. It says suspected spam caller, and it's like flashing red. And so you, of course, never answer it because, like, why are you going to pick that up? Obviously, you know what's on the other side. Google's telling you. Well, they added a new feature to that. If you go into the settings, that is filter spam calls. And what that does is... Yeah, instead of seeing that red banner now, when it identifies it with the red banner, it's not even going to send it to your phone. You won't get a call anymore. It's going to go directly to your voicemail. And so... It's one last thing you have to worry about.
Wait a second, because I am currently in my phone app. Show me. I was trying to find it because I'm not seeing the option to do this.
Oh, is your phone app updated?
Just go back, Jason, to show where you got to it.
Well, here, let me try and do this without.
Oh, you got. You can't. Right. Right.
Without showing everything. So sorry. That's my wife. That's okay. But the overflow menu settings. Okay. Hopefully, you saw enough there. Caller ID and spam.
Yeah, I don't have that. Okay, so...
Interesting.
What are you carrying these days, Stacey?
I have my Pixel 2. Pixel 2? Yes.
You should have it.
And is it up to date?
It is up to date.
That's bizarre.
I'll see.
I wonder why. And
it's the straight-up phone app, right?
Yeah.
The default phone app?
Yeah, just making sure. Yeah, it's the straight-up.
Yeah, I got
it. If I hit that, I just get uninstall updates. That's so weird. So weird. And if I go to advanced, I can go to modify system settings, but that is not what it is.
Sound like the same app. Is that, are you in phone or contacts or? Oh, there we go. Okay. So show.
Oh, no. She held it down. Just click on it.
Just go into the phone app. Don't go into the settings, into your settings.
Like you're going to make a phone call.
Yeah, so just go into the phone app, overflow menu, settings from within the phone app. There
found
we go.
I was
confused.
Sorry.
I don't feel so dumb.
Like,
I got one right that you didn't, Stacey, if you made fun of me the first half hour of the show.
1-1.
Awesome.
And she just did that to make me feel better.
You guys are tied. Yeah, now you won't get those red things
anymore. I'm getting more calls that aren't identified as spam yet.
Yeah, they just go right to voicemail. And, of course, you won't get a voicemail because they'll be like, oh. It's a voicemail.
Well, that would be the worst if they filled it. Oh, my gosh. I hate people who leave voicemails. I currently have two voicemails, and I loathe both people who put them in there.
Yeah, yes. I know. Okay. I'm pretty allergic to voicemails these days as well. We did it. We made it.
We did it.
Another This Week in Google is in the history books almost anyways. Thank you, Jeff. It's always fun to do this, and I appreciate you allowing me to come on the show and hang out with you guys. Jeff Jarvis, what do you want people to know about everything you're up to?
Nothing.
Okay. Buzzmachine.com is all you really need to know.
Yeah.
@ Jeff Jarvis.
@Jeff Jarvis.
There we go. See, that's bonus. That's bonus content. Okay. Thank you, Jeff. And Stacey, what about you? Where do you want... Working on anything exciting that you want people to know about?
No, just the usual newsletter every Friday, Stacey on IoT, and the podcast every Thursday. So
fantastic. Right on. Thank you, Stacey. We do this show, some of us or all of us or sometimes none of us because I'm not normally on. Leo's here. But usually this show happens every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific. Maybe more like 1:30, to be honest. 2000 UTC at twit.tv/live. If you want to watch live, you can do that. We stream all of our shows, the recording of all of our shows, in a live continuous stream throughout the day at twit.tv/live. So you can tune in, take part in the chat room, and have fun. And sometimes even get involved in the show. Like you put something in the chat room, and we pick up on it, and we bring you in. It's a lot of fun. If you catch this show in podcast form, you'll want to go to twit.tv/twig, twit.tv/twig. There you will find all of our past episodes. You'll find ways to subscribe to all of our shows, audio feeds, video feeds, you name it. Everything's there. And you can start from the beginning, episode 1, and catch up and become an expert in everything Google and the cloud and everything in between. But that is it for this week. It's been a lot of fun. I know that Leo is out of town in September for a few weeks in a row, 3 weeks. So if anything, I'll see you guys then. It'll be a lot of fun. But until then, have a fantastic week and the folks that surround me here. We'll see you next week on another episode of This Week in Google. Bye, everybody.